Well, he should slow down then.
This one. Got her?
It's Senator Coonan Day.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good afternoon. Yeah. Call this meeting of the State Department Veterans Budget Division to order. It is 2 minutes after four. That's pretty good. And we have a quorum. It's on February 11th, 2015. Today we have three bills. We'll start with Senator Sparks' bill relating to public television. Then we're going to take up two gambling bills from Senator Conan. Before we begin, I'd like to announce that we have formed Veterans and Military Affairs Subdivision this year. Senator Carlson's going to be the chair, and Senator Anderson, the Republican lead. Senators Stumpf, Metzen, and Gazalka will also serve. The goal is to be able to hear the numerous veterans and military finance bills together, and so we'll be able to package them in one bill and present the full committee to the full committee the entire budget. So I want to thank you, Senator Carlson, and the rest of you for agreeing to be on that committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. With that, Senator Sparks, welcome to the committee, and go ahead with your presentation. And Senator Sparks, at some point here, we're going to unveil the fiscal impact, and we have new forms that the department is MMB. MMB is foisted upon us. There's a few little, and so you're kind of a guinea pig. But
okay, that's good.
That's good indication. Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to present Senate File 243. Dealing with public television equipment grants appropriation. Mr. Chair and members, this bill is an appropriations request for the public television equipment grants program. With me today are Bill Straczynski, representing the public television, and Eric Olson from my hometown station, KSMQ-TV, located in Austin, Minnesota. They will explain the program.
Senator, excuse me. Mr. Olson's been in Duluth, too.
Uh-oh. I've been found out. And Minneapolis. But
Mr. Chair and members, they will explain the program, what our request is today, and give you a real-world example of the type of projects that this money would be able to fund. So with that, if it's okay, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Straczynski first.
Mr. Straczynski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bill Straczynski, and I'm a lobbyist representing the Friends of Minnesota Public Television. And I've represented them for the past 35 years at the state capitol here. This public television equipment grants program is actually identified in part of your budget that you'll see talk about later on in the Department of Administration. It's been part of the Department of Administration's budget since the 1970s. In fact, the first grants to public television for equipment were made back in the 1950s, so it's been around quite a while. And over the years, you've appropriated over $31 million worth of equipment grants in the last 34 years when I did an analysis recently. So this is a statewide program affecting all public TV stations, but there's only six of them throughout the state of Minnesota. And it's important because these dollars, this request is specifically for $750,000 for our equipment grants. Current grant levels are $250,000. We're asking for an increase of $500,000 per year. In the past, we've had as much as $1.5 million per year for equipment grants and what have you. So these funds are vital. And let me put it in perspective for you, Mr. Chairman and members. We have about $6.9 million worth of equipment grant needs in public television at our six stations right now for this next biennium. We're asking the state to help us with about 20% of that, or $750,000. The difference in the bill before you, in fact, it's a little bit off yet, is I tried factoring in administrative fees above our request for the Department of Administration, and I think the number should be a little bit higher. It should be 770 or 780 instead of 770, regardless of for their administrative fees for the agency. But I think it's important to understand that public television in Minnesota is actually owned by the communities in which they're located. They serve. We serve the entire state of Minnesota, and basically there's a public TV station in each region. So the state funding is important. We're partners with you on that. You go to the surrounding states like Wisconsin or Iowa and South Dakota, Nebraska, or what have you, those public television stations are actually owned by government. To put in perspective for you, the state of Wisconsin's budget for public television is over $20 million. So it's a big number. We're not asking our taxpayers of the state of Minnesota to step up to the plate to that extent, but we've always appreciated our partnership on a limited basis because the state dollars are extremely important to help us leverage dollars in our communities for all the public TV stations to fund their equipment needs. Two other quick bits of information. There used to be a public television facilities grant program available at the federal level. 2 years ago, with sequestration, I think I've got the word right, that program was eliminated. And also, the greater Minnesota stations, the ones in Appleton and Bemidji and Brainerd and Duluth and what have you, used to get a lot of get equipment grant dollars from the Rural Development Administration. Those funds have been extremely limited as well. So we're asking you to help us a little bit more than you have in the past, but we're willing to go out and raise the bulk of the dollars we need from other sources, including our viewers and what have you. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the extent of my comments. Thank you for your consideration today.
Thank you, Mr. Straczynski. Mr. Olson?
Chairman Saxog and members, I'm Eric Olson, President and CEO of KSMQ Public Television, based in Austin. We've been on the air for 42 years there. We are located, as we've always been since we signed on at Riverland Community College on the campus there. We are a 501c3 governed by a board of directors whose members come from throughout the KSMQ public television viewing area, including folks from Mankato, Owatonna, Albert Lea, Rochester, and Austin. We provide local, independent, and PBS television programming over our four broadcast streams. Being a small operation, the smallest in the state with 12 full-time employees, we are very grateful for the support that your committee and the body as a whole have supported, given to KSMQ and the other stations on behalf of our viewers and members. Thank you very much for that support. That's definitely needed for our operation. A small portion of the grant, as Bill mentioned, a small portion of the grant you're considering today is going to help KSMQ Public Television provide a high-definition television signal and upgraded physical plant in order to better serve our 600,000 approximate residents in KSMQ's service territory. We ask for your committee's support on that request. Besides providing an HD signal, this $500,000 physical plant upgrade will also allow KSMQ to better produce live public affairs programming, such as town hall meetings and school events and the like, which we aren't doing today. And I should note that we have other significant funding partners for this project, including the Hormel Foundation, KSMQ Public Television members, and other partners who are in process right now. KSMQ Public Television is the only broadcaster in our region to organize, produce, and broadcast candidate roundtable discussions, and we do this every election cycle for every contested state office in our viewing area, as well as for local races, select ones, sheriff, city council, and the like. And we're the only television station to broadcast a weekly public affairs show in our region, and we do that in prime time, which is, can be pretty valuable space for a broadcaster. We're also the broadcast partner with Mower County Emergency Government. We televise the activities here at the legislature, like right now, so, we don't care much about ratings. Well, I'm the one who's on right now, so yeah. Just kidding.
Good luck.
Bill mentioned also that joining with our other five stations, our other partners, we are able to provide this service statewide. We're the only broadcaster that has a full footprint, including the angle up there. KSMQ down in our neck of the woods is also active off the air in our communities. We do some educational work and provide some other services. Speaking on behalf of the KSMQ Public Television Board of Directors and our staff, we are most appreciative of the bipartisan legislative support that has already been expressed for this project. And thank you again very much, and thank you for the time to speak before you.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Senator Sparks and the testifiers, this has been a bill that I've signed on to, I think, every year or every time that you've asked for a bill. I think public TV in particular in rural Minnesota is critically important. You know, I'm in the Brainerd area. I've lived in the Bemidji area. There's really no other local presence up there, and so it becomes particularly needed in rural Minnesota. And so I think that you guys consistently have done a good job. You fill a void that really nobody else is there to fill, which is why I have my constant support. We have Senator Metzen on hockey rinks, and you know, this is one that I feel is pretty important.
Hockey rinks are too. So.
Senator Stump?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question for, I imagine, Mr. Straczynski. How would the changes or capital investment on the part of TPT affect the quality of the programming basically the quality of the programming that would go out to the other stations around the state?
Mr. Straczynski.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, TPT is an independent producer of programs. They actually facilitate the distribution of the legislative broadcast signal for all the other stations. But they share their programming with all the stations, and the other stations, like Mr. Olson's station down in Austin, produces locally originated programming, which gets shared through the state's fiber backbone system to TPT, who also distributes those programs as well. So TPT is certainly a feeder at the national level, does a lot of programs locally here as well, but so do all the stations. So they share and distribute programs to each other.
So, Mr. Chairman and...
Senator Stump.
The capital changes that are going to be made, will they raise the quality of the programs that go out?
Mr. Straczynski.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, are you talking about the capital investment, for example, that was passed last year in the bonding bill?
Correct.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, yeah, I think all that helps. That's an enhanced and remodeled facility for Twin Cities Public Television that'll help them distribute a signal and do better quality programming and make it more accessible to the general public. That was the intent of that. We think that'll help for all that TPT as well as all the stations. They distribute that on a statewide basis. They're an important player in that regard. By any means, before you funded money for the Bemidji Public Television Station, which will improve their facilities and their opportunities to do similar kinds of things in their particular viewing area as well. So those dollars, those resources, are extremely important to protect. And these dollars are for the actual equipment that's in these stations and the facilities. And you're further protecting your state's investment that you've already made in public television over these years. And so that was a worthwhile project as well for their capital, their bonding dollars for TPT. It'll help them immensely do their programming, just like Bemidji was and what have you. So thank you.
Thank you.
Other question, comments?
Chairman, just...
Yes, Senator.
Just, Mr. Straczynski, do you have a House author? Are you working on it? I see on the sheet that there's no companion.
Mr. Straczynski.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, yes, we have a House author. It's Representative Straczynski. The bill will be introduced probably Tuesday.
Is that your brother? No. it's a different spelling.
Mr. Chairman, different spelling. You're correct. We have 15 authors so far signed on to that bill on a bipartisan basis as well. And so that bill will be introduced next week, and the chair of the other body said we will be having a hearing on that in the near distant future.
Mr. Chairman, I think I knew the answer before I asked the question, but that's good.
Other questions? I'm going to ask Mr. Lundeen to go over our fiscal note here for a few minutes.
Okay, thank you,
Mr. Lundeen.
Mr. Chair. As you probably noticed, the fiscal notes look a little bit different than they have in previous sessions. This was due to some changes with the new fiscal note system at Minnesota Management and Budget, and basically the same information is there. I think it's just arranged a little bit differently, the tables and so forth, but the stuff that you're used to seeing, the assumptions and the expenditures and that are all showing in the fiscal note. So taking a look at this particular fiscal note, If you're looking at the first page, there is a cost of $31,000 in fiscal year 2016 and $30,000 in fiscal year 17. And that cost is attributable to the Department of Administration. They need a grant specialist senior position with their grants management program to administer the grants. And if you turn to the second page of the fiscal note, it just kind of goes through, again, a table with the cost there. And then they're talking about the assumptions. The department is talking about its requirements under the statute dealing with the grants management support for grants. And then if you look at page 3 of the fiscal note, it kind of lays out the rationale behind the 0.15 FTE that the Department of Administration has requested. And I should point out that the Department of Administration gets a base appropriation for the grants management program of $125,000 a year. But so they're needing more help. I think that basically funds about one FTE. And so with all the grants throughout state government and that, typically there is some set aside to pay for the management of them. So unless there's any questions, I think that...
Questions? Committee? Okay, anybody from the room that would like to testify? If not, Mr. Struzinski. I got it. I'm going to have to have marbles in my mouth here next time. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to point out that we support the Department Administration's request at least for those dollars. They've done an excellent job over the years administering grants to public television, and we appreciate the relationship we have with them, and we understand they have a greater need, and we support that request.
Senator Sparks, any final comments?
Mr. Chair, no, just thank you so much for the opportunity to present today. I think that, you know, we do understand that this is an important service, and if you can provide some funding, it would be greatly appreciated, not only in Austin, but around the entire state.
Thanks, Senator Sparks. With that, I think we'll take Senate File 243 and lay it over for possible inclusion in the budget bill.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair and members. Next, we have Senate File 188, Senator Conan. Senator Conan, we have website or self-service device lottery ticket sales suspension authorization.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. And what this bill is a prohibition for selling e-scratch-offs, play at the pump, and the ATM games. It does still allow, however, the drawing games such as Powerball and Go for Five and that type of games. And that's pretty much what the bill is about. I believe there are some testifiers who would like to speak to this, unless you'd like to look at the other bill first. But
well, I think we'll probably take one at a time.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have Mr. Struzinski is representing the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bill Struzinski, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association, an organization that has over 800 members and represents more than 2,000 convenience store operators in Minnesota. In fact, we're the second largest retailer of lottery tickets, and we support the senator's legislation. And we thank the senator for bringing this bill forward. We've been, as an association, we've been opposed to play at the pump since it was originally rolled out in the initial test sites 3 years ago. We've watched play at the pump, and then we identified several concerns we have with this program and with the lottery and presenting it to the public and to the stations. We agree with many others that the lottery never had express authority in law to do this particular program, nor do they have the authority to, in law to do the online gaming aspects of that as well. So we're very concerned about that fundamental issue. We're concerned that the technology still may be problematic with operating systems. I understand there's only 58 locations right now around the state of Minnesota out of the 2,700 gas stations in Minnesota. We've had, I know, and I've personally talked to a couple of the owners of stations and original test sites. They had major technology issues, and certainly it was with Verifone at that time, and maybe they got some of them worked out. I don't know, but it was certainly problematic. So we have concerns going forward about the technology aspects of this particular play-at-the-pump machines. You have to understand that at the pump itself, that person in that card reader, that machine is a different lottery retailer than the person who owns the C-store or inside the store. So we think there's also some confusion. When you've had technology problems or drive-offs or whatever, all kinds of things, which some of the stations have been reimbursed for, the public, our consuming public, is confused. When they complain about a problem, they come inside the store and we say, well, you got to contact the lottery or the vendor for that. It's not us. And it just is, we found that those are problematic issues in the industry. So we think that's a problem. I guess if you know how to operate the system, it can be done fairly fast. You put your debit card in the machine and you can get a lottery ticket fairly fast. We still think that new people have trouble with it. It slows down the distribution and slows down the process for people trying to put gas in their cars. I want to say that since we met with the lottery in December, again, and reaffirmed our opposition to the Play at the Pump program as it's being rolled out and distributed. When we met with the lottery, they provided the report, and I have it right here, and they said that they had 52 actual active retailers with these Play at the Pump items. This is a card reader at the pump itself, and several others were pending. But for the fiscal year to date in December, it was $9,627 taken in at the Play at the Pump. And you have to understand that Play at the Pump, you have to buy them in strips, a minimum strip of $10. So it could be a $10, $20, up to $50 transaction because the lottery has a limit of $50 per week or maybe a month. So we think that's only 960 transactions. So the overall impact of that particular transaction is not significant. The revenues to the state of Minnesota are inconsequential with that program. So we know that it's not significant. The fiscal note and testimony from the lottery and perhaps others, some stations that do like it, will testify that their sales have increased because of Play at the Pump. We disagree with that. We've never seen an analytical report based on the test sites that were originally in play. Usually you do a pilot project. It's perhaps still being built as a pilot project. You do a pilot project. You lay out information about here's what we found out. Here's the success. Here's how much revenue we generated. Here is the problems or whatever, and you make a management decision to move forward. We've never seen a report in 3 years of this, and I do know for a fact at least one of the original test sites actually asked the equipment to be removed from her locations in Plymouth, Minnesota, because it was causing so much disruption, at least the equipment at that time was. So we've never seen the actual any kind of report that deals with that. So we don't see how it's increased sales necessarily in the stores because of Play at the Pump. Now, I'll tell you what we think is increased sales. We've talked to some of our regular retailers in the industry. What's increased sales in the store is $2 gasoline. People have more money to spend. There's different and better, perhaps better games now available in scratch-offs and things through the lottery. And tomorrow's Powerball is going to be $450 million. Or is it tonight's Powerball? I guess it is. That sells a lot of tickets. So we think those, whether you have Play at the Pump or not Play at the Pump, we think that it has increased those sales. The only other literature I've ever seen was a lot of information put together by the lottery, which shows you that in Europe there was an increase of sales inside the locations if based on a report that was produced in Europe at play at the pump locations. And we just disagree with that is a reason that the lottery retailers have succeeded because of that. I think that there's confusion. I think that this has a tendency to pit big retailers and small retailers. A lot of the stations who have it now are very small retailers, single stores or whatever. But I do note in the literature that was just announced that Murphy Oil is going to be now distributing these at all the pumps at their locations nationwide, and that happens to be Walmart. And so we're concerned about the impact that it has in competition with bigger stores versus smaller stores and whatever, primarily because the equipment is not available to all store operators. This equipment, the Play at the Pump card readers, which costs about $5,000 a pump, $2,500 to $5,000 a pump, it only works with some of the operating systems out there in the industry. It doesn't work with all of them. It doesn't work with the major operating systems. So we're concerned about all of that going forward and what have you, Mr. Chairman. So in bottom line is we don't think that the lottery's got authority to do this. Specifically, we're concerned about the technology benefits of it. We've never seen a report, a definitive study that says this is the impact it's had and here's why. And we're concerned about big versus small, as I mentioned. And we'd like to see, again, an analytical study. And I should say that the National Conference, or National Convenience Store Association nationwide is opposed to Play at the Pump as well, not just our particular association in Minnesota. Admittedly, there are some stores that want it. Some independent people do like it. So and the bottom line is we want people to come inside of our store to buy lottery tickets and scratch-off tickets or whatever, because that's where we get the commissions. They might buy a cup of coffee, might buy a candy bar at the same time or whatever. So we view the lottery now becoming a greater competitor, particularly with online sales, taking away business from inside store sales. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I'll stand for any questions you may have.
Sure. Senator Metzen.
Yeah, Mr. Straczynski, you mentioned that this would not be available to all. Why, if you have the money, why couldn't you do it? I thought that's what you said. It wouldn't be available to all.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, that's true. It's not available to all because gasoline stations and these stores, convenience stores, have different operating systems. There may be 100 different computer systems operating in the industry. Quick Trips, Holiday, others, they all have their own dedicated systems. There's Radiant, there's NCR, there's Gilbarco and Rarepoint. But there's different operating systems. This equipment, Play at the Pump, only works with a few of the operating systems. So it's not available to all gas stations right now.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you could change, wouldn't you? Or not?
Mr. Chairman,
it wouldn't be available at all if you made the move to a different the system that would handle it.
Mr. Straczynski.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen,
I don't know.
Good point. We could change. It'd be very expensive for each operator to change their system so that it would interface with the Link 3 systems. Link 3 is the manufacturer of the equipment, the card reader specifically. It's up to them to have their card readers interface with the operating systems, and that link only has been made with a few of the operating systems out there, not the rest of them. Again, it's very expensive to put in. This equipment's very expensive. And a lot of the stations, Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, they've already made the change. The chip and pin systems, MasterCard, Visa, they've already made that change, and there's no benefit for them to go back. But if their competitor, who is a large competitor, starts to install it, they may have to look at doing that, which then is very expensive to them to have to upgrade their systems. And that creates the competition we're concerned about and the costs to our operations and therefore the public.
Other questions? Thank you, Mr. Straczynski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Grassel.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jake Grassel. I represent Citizens Against Gambling Expansion. Our organization is made up of Minnesotans from all walks of life, political backgrounds, economic backgrounds, that have come together and converged under one similar background, that they think the state already has enough gambling. And they have asked us to come and support this bill for a variety of reasons. One, the social impacts of gambling, the expansion of gambling, are dire. Expansion of gambling, problem gambling costs marriages, costs lives, costs dollars. The fiscal impact is for every $1, studies have shown that the state takes in $2 to $3 are spent by the community. Mr. Chair, I have some other concerns with this bill. Lately, I know Minnesotans from all walks of life, our members particularly, have been asking, what is the future of Minnesota? What does that look like? And right now we have the Minnesota Lottery, but their stated purpose is to replace losses in lottery sales by an aging population and going to online sales to get new market share, get new customers, and specifically derived at the new 18 to 29-year-old group. What you've heard, maybe if you've been on other committees in last year, and you'll probably hear today, is that 18 is as young as it can possibly go, that they're not going to get any youth. They have safeguards in place because you would need a bank account and a driver's license. I don't know about you guys. When I was growing up, we didn't have a lottery. But had we had online lottery, I know their brother that I was very competitive with, and we would have most likely had competitions as to see who could get a lottery ticket first. We both had bank accounts. That doesn't mean that I could go on and play the lottery. However, our mother back in those days had to be a joint account. She was 18. We certainly would have, I know my brother and I, we certainly would have went and got her driver's license. We would have used our debit card, and that would have been linked up. Very possibly that means we could have played online. But the bigger concern, Mr. Chairman, is today, for the first time in my life, I personally went and bought some lottery tickets. Got them right here in my pocket. Haven't played them yet. The reason I say that is because I walked into a Cub Foods. I looked at the customer service line where you go to buy a lottery ticket. It was pretty long. There was people playing. There was a $500 million Powerball today. So what did I do? I threw 10 bucks into a lottery vending machine, hit the quick play option, and out come 5 tickets. Walk out the door. A 15-year-old could go do this. No oversight. A little sticker that says you must be 18 years old to play. Well, the lottery will probably tell you, well, they couldn't come and they couldn't collect on those tickets because they're not 18. Mr. Chair, when I was 16, my brother was 18. I'm sure if I would have won a $50 ticket for 10 bucks, I would have got the other 40. So I ask this committee, look into this. This is very concerning. If the lottery can't control the current machines that they have all across the state, much like an old cigarette vending machine that we have removed from this state because a 16-year-old could go up, put their $2 in, and get a pack of smokes. Now a 16-year-old could go up, put their $10 in, and get their 5 lottery tickets, scratch-off tickets. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is a real concern for the future of our state. We are going to have young people playing lottery games. It's going to cost jobs. It's going to cost livelihoods. And so what do we want this state to do? Do we want to continue on and support the lottery and their mission that tells our next generation, our youth who are having trouble finding jobs, that to shore up their finances, they should go out and play a $500 million lottery ticket, when in reality, they're not going to win. They're just going to lose. Or should we say, you know what, enough is enough, and encourage the future of Minnesotans to work hard, save some money, invest wisely in a 401k, and live a decent lifestyle rather than squandering their money the way the lottery wishes them to do, by giving money to the state. Mr. Chair, I would encourage this committee to support both of these bills that are going to come before you today, Bills 188 and 229, because we simply cannot have more gambling in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Grisel. Appreciate your comments. Ed Van Patten, Executive Director of the Lottery Board.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. Thank you for having me here today. As you know, my name is Ed Van Patten, Executive Director of the Minnesota State Lottery. As expected, I'm here to oppose both of these bills, and I will address the testimony addresses both bills, Mr. Chairman, so if it's okay, I'll just proceed with that.
That'd be just fine, Mr. Van Patten.
Thank you. And as you know, it affects our ability to offer electronic instant tickets, play at the pump, and play at the ATMs. I've stated to the committees before, and I'd like to say again for those of you I haven't said this to, apparently there's a feeling that the lottery hasn't been transparent in the past. I felt we had, but I apologize for any such feelings that have been developed. And I pledge to you that we will continue to further develop those relationships. I have hired a legislative liaison at the lottery, which they hadn't had one for years, to assist in that task. And I think you, most of you know him. His name's Chris Kwapik, and he is actually covering another hearing for us today. I'd like you to know that I, along with my team, take the constitutional mandate to run a successful lottery very seriously, and to that end, we awarded $328 million in prizes to your constituents last year, and $127 million paid into public programs. Since the lottery was initiated 25 years ago, we have transferred $1.3 billion to the general fund, $660 million to the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, and more than $159 million to each the Game and Fish Fund and Natural Resources Fund. And I think, or in fact, we know that we've provided a great deal of good entertainment to our players. Lottery proceeds have supported many organizations and countless research projects at the University of Minnesota, including Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center and the State Departments of Agriculture, Education, and Natural Resources. Lottery-funded programs have directly benefited every county in this state. We have found that Minnesotans are very proud of their lottery and that it has so strongly supported the environment, education, health care, and many other critical efforts. There is mention about our authority to proceed on this, and I will tell you that when I arrived at my job in 2012, I was presented with research from the general counsel at the Minnesota Lottery and also counsel for vendors who were looking to bid on the programs we were initiating at that time. The authority relied on by those individuals was Minnesota Statute Section 349.02, which regards adopting rules and procedures. Minnesota Statute Section 39.05 says the director may adopt rules governing the following elements of the lottery. One, the number and types of lottery retailer locations. Number 10 in that section, other rules the director considers necessary for the efficient operation and administration of the lottery. Prior to the lottery launching, Administrative Rule Section 7856.1020 was adopted and says in part that the director's powers and duties include but are not limited to the administration of the following: the types of lottery games to be conducted, the types and numbers of locations at which tickets may be sold, the methods to be used in selling tickets. It's obvious the legislature and the lottery have a difference of opinion on what this authority means, but this is the language that was relied upon by council in 2009, in fact, in approving proceeding with these initiatives. Our goal has been to create brand awareness and stay relevant in an ever-changing marketplace. Over the course of the past year, we have noticed an uptick in sales and have had a positive effect on all businesses in every district around the state. We have also been very careful never to cannibalize sales from our traditional retail partners. We recognize that without them, the lottery would not be as successful as it has been the last 25 years. These retailers are truly our bread and butter and the most trusted way that players purchase lottery products. When subscription sales were being developed, notification was sent to legislative leaders on April 27 of 2010. And that initial program required a minimum six-week purchase, and the purchase was delayed one day for downloading into the system. At that time in 2010, the maximum play per week was set, per player was set at $50 per week. In October of 2012, the lottery and our vendor at that time agreed to upgrade the system to allow same-day or real-time transactions and single-draw purchases of our draw games. And the plan at that time was developed to develop a system for the electronic instant tickets. Our vendor, Scientific Games, at that time agreed to assume all costs of development and, in fact, reimbursed the lottery $250,000 for a new internal control system to operate and monitor this new system. In return, Minnesota Lottery agreed that in the event of any early termination of the agreement, we would allow them to negotiate a fair payment that would allow it to recover its expenses and receive just compensation. The lottery agreed to these terms because it was never our intention to terminate the contract early, obviously. But by doing this, there was no upfront cost to the Minnesota Lottery. In fact, saved us millions of dollars. Play at the ATM was developed on the old system with a one-day delay for activation of the ticket in October of 2012. In November of 2012, Play at the Pump was developed on the old system also. The initial pilot with Verifone definitely had some problems with the Verifone software. There was no problem ever reported with any of the Minnesota Lottery software. And Link 3 develops software. It has nothing to do with the pump system itself. It only develops software to register the transaction for the purchase of the ticket at the pump or at the ATM. We now have integrated with the Gilbarco Veeder-Root system starting October of 2013 and have not had one problem reported since that time. And also with the Murphy USA system, they have 9 stores in the state of Minnesota. They launched their first just last week in Buffalo, Minnesota. The plan with Link 3 is to integrate with every POS provider, and they are making progress in their negotiations with all of those providers and fully intend to do that. In fact, they're launching California, Missouri presently, North Carolina, and Georgia in the very near future, and are working with many point-of-sale providers to develop that sales capability. And I would point out the largest publication in convenience store industry, CSP Magazine, voted this product the best new retail product of 2014. September of 2013 is when those systems were converted to same-day or real-time sales, and you could also buy single-draw tickets at subscription, Play at the ATM, and Play at the Pump. And then in February, a year ago, we launched the program for our electronic instant tickets. We have kept the limit at $50 a week because that's the responsible thing to do. And currently, less than 0.5% of our subscribers ever hit the $50 limit. And we presently have over 33,667 subscribers, and we have hit $5.4 million in sales on that system. I would point out that the plan when that system was developed was to jointly promote retailers at the internet site, and we have the capability to develop that to zero in by zip code so we can promote convenience stores, grocery stores, our retailers within a certain zip code and do couponing. We have pulled the plug on that development because of these developments, and we wanted to save money doing that. But I wanted you to know that we had planned to develop this system with our retailers. The Innovation Group, which is a nationally recognized research group, did a study in the state of Minnesota, Minnesota residents only, in 2012, before we launched that program, the EIT program. 37% of the people surveyed gambled on the internet at that time. Of that 37%, 55% of those people were aged 18 to 25, I believe. 18 to 30, I'm sorry, losing my place here. Spectrum Gaming Group did a survey in 2013 in Canada and Europe and found that introduction of internet sales on or internet sales actually increased retail sales in brick and mortar stores in every jurisdiction that had the product available. I believe you will go over the fiscal impact report that shows, I think, about $1 million impact per year. That addresses only the sales potential lost revenues, which are going up, you know, every week they are improving. But one thing it does not address is the potential loss to vendors if we are deemed to be in breach of the contract. I can't tell you how much that would be, but it could be as much as $12 million based on what we have seen from the vendors. That doesn't mean we would, of course, have to pay all that. We do remain open to negotiate any kind of compromise you may present. However, in the present form, we would have to oppose this legislation. Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to answer any questions. I would like to inform you that one of the retailers who has the play at the pump system is present and would like to address this committee as a constituent.
Thank you, Mr. Van Pin. Senator Gonzalez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, am I saying it right, Van Petten?
Yeah, Van
right? Petten. Thank you.
Good Dutch name.
I have a question first and then a comment, but how much consultation did you have of the legislative bodies regarding the original intent of the statutes you cited?
Mr. Van Petten. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I have not address that issue with them. The general counsel that was at the lottery when I got there, Dale McDonald, was responsible. He worked in the Senate, I believe, when that legislation was drafted, and I relied on his expertise in that regard and his experiences.
Senator Gazalka.
So, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier and to the committee, I think we take the expansion of gambling seriously and carefully in Minnesota. And I would simply say if we weighed in on electronic versus paper pull tabs, that certainly ATMs and pay at the pump we would have wanted to be involved in. And that is probably the number one reason why I support these pieces of legislation is because we didn't have any say. We didn't talk about it at all. And so that was why I asked you that question up front, because if you'd known that we weighed in on that issue, this is even broader than that.
Other questions? We have a testifier. Would you come forward and recognize or identify yourself?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Roger Green. I've been in the service station and convenience store business since 1972.
Go ahead. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. I thank you for the opportunity to address this. I put in new pumps in October with the express purpose of adding E85 and E15 with a grant helping some of the costs from the Minnesota State Agriculture Department. And the first thing I wanted to do was get pay at the pump. I had heard about it about a year previously, so in my plans to replace my pumps, that was paramount for me to do that. I've found that it has brought sales up in our lottery sales up and eliminates some of the backup in the line, and it has people buying that have never come into the store. A lot of people don't come in. And my November sales increase was $13,000 on my lottery alone in November. In December, it was $16,000, and in January, it was $22,000. And that was only in January. There was only 710 pay at the pump. But it does help with the line. It does help with the backup, and I really think that it's helped us substantially in our sales. Our convenience store inside store sales have pretty much stayed about the same. So we know that we're picking up customers that have never bought lottery before. And also it prompts you at the pump to play the lottery, and I expect that's what is giving us the increase inside on people coming in that want to pick their own numbers and so on.
Questions for the testifier? Thank you, sir. Appreciate you coming. Other testifiers? If not, I'm going to ask... I'm going to ask Mr. Lundin to go over the fiscal note again, or fiscal note for Senate File 188.
Okay, everybody should have the fiscal note in front of them. I guess I'm going to talk about the table a little bit, and then I'll dig into some of the assumptions and that are later in the fiscal note. So, I mean, essentially on the front page, you can look at the impact to the general fund. This would be the net proceeds that are transferred to the general fund. I should point out in 2016, given the effective date of the fiscal note, they're assuming that this bill would be effective October 1st. So the loss of revenue in 2016 is 75%. Of what would be in the subsequent years. And so to the general fund, that's $402,016. And then when you get a full year of revenue loss, it's $536,000 going forward. And then you can also see the loss to the other funds. There's a loss to the Game and Fish Fund, the Environmental Trust Fund, and then there's also a loss to the state parks, the metro parks, and the local trails grants, and the zoos. As I move down the fiscal note, there's a EBO comment, the Executive Budget Officer's comment, which the director of the lottery did talk about the impact of breaking the contracts and what sort of the vendors may seek out. There's an estimate of maybe as high or higher than $12 million. But that amount is not showing up on the fiscal note as a cost. You may recall last year in the fiscal note, there was a cost showing up in the first year due to that. But that is not showing up here this year. MMB is considering that to be a secondary impact and something that will be negotiated or going through the legal process. So at this time, there's no way to assess if there will be any cost, and if there is, what it will be. I think then moving to the second page and kind of going through some of the assumptions, maybe the best way is I'm just going to kind of not follow the fiscal note directly and just kind of talk about how they came up with some of the estimates there. As far as the annual sales, what they've come up with, and if you look at assumption 3 on page 4, they're talking about an increase in the traditional lottery products due to the play at the pump at the retailers. And according to the lottery, they've seen a 3% increase at those retailers that have pay at the pump compared to those that don't have it. So they're assuming in the fiscal note that the average sales at the convenience stores are $210,000, and they're assuming when this is in full effect that it'll be at 500 stores and then the 3% sales increase. So that gets you to about $3.15 million per year in annual sales. And then the next factor coming into the annual sales is the play at the pump loss sales. And that information is kind of detailed on the fiscal note on page 4. They're talking about it down on item number 1 there about the loss sales. will equal, or the current sales per retailer per month is $44, and they're taking that times the 500 that they assume when this is fully in effect in the 12 months. So you get a total of $264,000 there. As was noted in the testimony, the pilot program, currently there's 54 stations that are doing the pay at the pump. And then the next lost sales is due to the ATM. And the fiscal note is saying that the ATM sales per location is about $7.33. So they're taking that times the assumed 500 stores and the 12 months, and that gets you $44,000. And then for the electronic ticket sales, the fiscal note, if you take a look at page 4, under the assumptions number 5, they're talking about the $700,000 there of sales of electronic instant tickets. That is an item that is in concurrence with the governor's proposed budget. And so if you add up all those, you get the total sales, which they're talking about under the expenditure and revenue formula, item number 2, the $4,158,000 for the year. And then as we move down, based on that is we have the in lieu of sales tax, which is a 6.5%. So if you take 6.5% of the little over 4 million, then you get the breakout to the various funds. And the formula is in statute, or the percentage that each of the areas get. So if you look on the front of the fiscal note, that would be items dealing with the state parks, the metro parks, the local trails grants, and the zoos. It's a total of $98,000. And then also the Game and Fish Fund, there would be $98,000 loss in revenue going into that fund. And then the amount to the general fund would be $75,000. Then as you move down in the fiscal note, it talks about the net proceeds, which is the money that goes to the general fund and the environment and natural resources funds. And the fiscal note is saying that the sales generate an average of 18.5% to the net proceeds. So that is the total of the $769,000, and then that's distributed 60% to the general fund and 40% to the environment and natural resources fund. So when you, the impact to the general fund, when you add together the $461,000 from the net proceeds and the $75,000 from the in lieu of sales tax, that brings you to the $536,000 in fiscal year 17, showing the loss to the general fund. And then, as I did mention, in fiscal year 16, it was only 75% of that amount, so that is why that is a smaller amount. And one other item that the fiscal note touches on, and it's under the assumptions number 4. It's talking about, while the bill permits the lottery to continue selling the draw games through the website, they've had some conversations with the vendor saying that that probably would not be economically viable, so that may not be something that would continue over long term, or it may be just something that stops temporarily. But anyway, the revenue loss from that is not contained in the fiscal note. So I think with that, I've kind of gone through the fiscal note. I think things are kind of spread out on there. I hope it makes sense how I went through
Chairman.
It.
Chairman.
Yeah, Senator Benson.
I'm the only person in the building that didn't follow all of that, I'm sure, but Carlson didn't either. What is it, $2,880,000 on the front page? Is that what they the lottery would not get
sales
if we disbanded or took away the play at the pump? Is that a kind of a net loss then, the 2.8?
Mr. Lundy.
If we don't allow it.
Yeah,
with this
if we
bill.
Don't allow it, that would be in the tails, $2 million.
I don't need the breakdown of everything, but I just want to know if that's a net loss if we disband or do away with the plant deposit. Is that correct? 2.8. That's yes or no. All these other numbers in the back. I wanted to know the net.
Okay. I mean, it wouldn't be. It would be including the ATM loss and
also
the electric, electronic instant tickets. So that is all the effect, and then the effect to all
not,
the various.
Mr. Chairman,
funds.
Not just at the pump, but but the pump plays a part in that, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay.
Other questions? Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this question is for Mr. Van Patten. I'm curious about this because I think there's an issue. You know, if I had his job and I'd been hired to expand so that I can generate more money, I understand this is a pretty complicated deal. But many of us are just fundamentally opposed to the expansion. So we cannot support the adoption of technology or mechanisms to increase gambling. That's just a fundamental value. So we can't support this, and so you cannot do your job. So I am curious as to, have you thought about an alternative? You see, the issue is, can you replace $2 million through a different way, like, I don't know, increasing the value, the cost of a ticket. $2 million is not a lot of money. But you've known that we are fundamentally opposed to the expansion. And, you know, the gentleman that owns the gas station just came and say, you know, there is a increase of 17,000, you know, his business and all of that. I don't understand if we actually contributed to pay for his for the actual pump. I don't know if we actually put money into that. So the expansion is clear, is happening, and so I'm thinking, did we contribute to that? And I hope we didn't. But I'm just curious as to what are other alternatives that are not attached to expansion so that we can continue to maintain this revenue? I don't know if my question is clear, but it's just that you're asking us to do something that we're fundamentally opposed to do, and so you know we're not going to go there. So what are the options that are left other than losing this source of funding for these different pots of money?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Van Patten.
Senator? The problem, as I see it, Senator Torres-Ray, is that there is a feeling that the lottery did not come to the legislature to get permission to do these initiatives. In 2012, when I got here, I did not know much about Minnesota politics. I'd only been up here to interview for this job, I guess. But I was assured by people in the administration that we did have the authority to proceed with these initiatives, and I acted upon that. That has been taken by some as a snub of the legislature, and it certainly was not intended to be such. Whenever I appeared in front of committees, we talked about the initiatives we were working on. In an interim committee hearing in October of 2013, we advised the committee at that time that we were developing the electronic instant tickets, and the opposition to that became more and more evident as we went along. So I don't know what the alternatives are if we turn this off. I don't see that it is an expansion of gaming. It's no more than building another convenience store is an expansion of gaming. But that's the situation as I understand it, and I do not have another alternative in mind other than continuing our what I consider to be very good marketing practices in other channels.
Thank you. Senator Klass?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. The first is, are we aware of currently in statute that there's any limitation on the autonomy of the lottery board to prevent them from doing the kind of action they've recently taken here on this pay at the pump? In other words, if we don't have anything in statute, I'm not sure we should be criticizing the board for the action they've taken. If we're not happy with that, then perhaps we should place in statute limitations.
Mr. Van Patten.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator. The original legislation enacting the lottery did provide for an oversight board. The legislature, sometime subsequent, I believe it was in 1995, I do not know that for sure, dissolved that board. So there is no oversight board. My position reports directly to the governor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Second question I have.
Yes, Senator
Klassen. Is for the owner of the convenience store. Could I just ask a quick question?
Roger Green.
Thank you. Could you share with us what your investment was in making these changes pay at the pump?
I sure can. The cost for the dispensers was close to $200,000. And the state agriculture was $30,000. And the reason for the grant was to add E85 and E15, and I have those figures here also, of increase in sales, if you're interested in them.
Thank you. So what you're saying is you made these changes based on good faith, based upon the knowledge that you could expand your business.
Yes, I did.
Thank you.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got to agree with some of my colleagues here. It seems like we were just here, Mr. Van Patten. It seems like yesterday. But just in a quick aside, I think that after we passed this in the legislature last year, the comment you made was you hope the governor vetoes it. That's after we had almost unanimous vote in the House and Senate clearly stating legislative intent and the desire of the people whom elected us. So I found that a little bit. If I'm incorrect in that if I'm not accurate, you correct me on that. The second thing, and maybe counsel can help, but I think I recall, I was looking for it over there, I couldn't find it. The amendment we added last year, looking at the statute was not permissive. It was particularly silent on these new technologies and these new ways to deliver lottery tickets and sell lottery tickets. So not knowing what new technology would come along, you can't list everything in statute. But certainly the statute, and as Senator Gazelka had mentioned, and Senator Torres Ray, it's a complex, very volatile issue, and to take silence as permission in the statute, I think, was a bit bold. And then your comment last year, I'm a little confused about that. So, I'm not trying to judge your character, but there is a legislative intent here, and I was a little taken aback by that comment last year. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Other questions, comments?
Mr. Chair, may I just briefly say I meant absolutely no disrespect for this body. In answer to a question from a reporter, I did say I would welcome that. I wanted a chance to prove that the information we had provided was true, that this was a very good system, and would help our retailers. I think we have shown that in the past year, but I respect this legislature's opinions and your ability to act.
Are there any other testifiers in the room? If not, what I need is a motion that Senate File 188 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to full Finance Committee.
Senator Chamberlain
makes that motion. Discussion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Aye.
Motion passed. Motion carries. Senator Cornyn, Senate File 229. It appears that we have Mr. Lutt to testify. Executive Director, Allied Charities.
This is
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Alan Lund, Executive Director of Allied Charities of Minnesota. I'm in front of you today to ask for your support of Senate File 229. This is the charitable gambling bill that last year was, as has been noted, was passed by the Senate and subsequently vetoed by the governor. This bill has the 27 sections in it. 25 of them deal with things that will help charitable gambling, simplifications of language, clarifications of language, making it easier for charities to stay in business. But the two that have garnered most of the attention are the two that deal with reining in the lottery. And we see the lottery as a competitor. There are four of us in the state that are allowed to conduct gambling. The 1,150 charities that work in their communities. We have the Minnesota Lottery, we have tribal gaming, and we have horse racing. What we believe that the lottery has done has overstepped their authority. In federal statute on internet gambling, it says that it must be expressly authorized by and placed in accordance with the laws of the state and the state law or regulations. In our opinion, that has not happened. What the lottery has done here is to change the game. Prior to them, their expansion into the ATMs, the pumps, and the internet, a person that wanted to gamble had to have intent and then had to act. You had to come into my legion. You had to go to the casino. You had to go to the cashier in the grocery or the convenience store to buy that. You had to go into your church basement to play bingo. You had to decide to do something, and then you had to act. What they have done is removed the intent. So now, every time, if allowed to continue, and it's carried on to its logical conclusion, every time you go to the ATM, every time you buy gas, and if you subscribe to their online, you will be asked, do you want to gamble? Do you want to gamble? Do you want to gamble? So it will be your constant companion. We believe that is not how the state, the citizens of the state, would wish you to proceed. We fully recognize that you have the ability to give them that permission, and that is your prerogative. The expansion here is something that it is... It changes the game so much that we would ask you to support 229. And in closing, I would just like to read you an email that I was sent by a lady, just an excerpt from it. And it says, the state lottery people are acting like drug pushers now. They want to invade your space. We would ask for your support of Senate File 229.
Thank you, Mr. Lund. Any other questions? Okay. Any other testifiers? I'm going to ask Mr. Lundin. There are just a couple of very small changes on the fiscal note for this bill. Would you review those with us?
For the language related to the lottery in 229, it would be the same as the fiscal note we looked at for 188. And in addition, the gambling control also has weighed in on the other provisions there, and there is no cost to the gambling control board as far as implementing anything in the bill.
Questions to Mr. Lundy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you're saying that we have a similar fiscal note, another $2 million in over a two-year period?
Mr. Lundy.
It wouldn't be another $2 million. The language in 229 okay. is similar to 188. So.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Other questions, comments? All right, as with 188, I would need a motion to move this on. Senator Chamberlain, the motion is Senate File 229 be recommended to pass and be referred to the full Finance Committee. Any discussion?
If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Other business before our committee? Members, I just want to remind you we will not be meeting on Monday. Next Wednesday, we're going to try to finish up the six remaining change item presentations that we have. And any other questions? Not means adjourned. Thank you very much.